Welcome to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley. And with me today, we have Holly C. LaBarbera, who is the author of All I Know. Now, she began her formal creative writing career with a lightning bolt of inspiration for her first book, the as-yet-unpublished 5 Days, followed by All I Know, and she's currently working on her third novel. She received her MA in counseling psychology from Santa Clara University, where she currently teaches as an adjunct professor, and she also runs her own psychotherapy practice, spending her days exploring relationships. So that is what she writes about, too. She witnesses brave journeys of self-discovery and sees the difficult choices people are called upon to make, all of which brings truth to the characters that Holly writes and the journeys they undertake. Holly was born in Hawaii, grew up just north of New York City, now lives outside of San Francisco. So she's equal parts New Yorker and California girl. Welcome to Writer's Voices, Holly.
Thank you, Monica. Glad to be here.
So you also, in your bio, it says that you started writing as a pen pal with your grandma.
Yeah.
Where did she live?
My grandma, when I was little, she lived in Indiana. She eventually moved to Florida, like a snowbird in Florida, and then she lived in Arizona for a while, and then she lived near my mom in New York at the very end to get some help getting taken care of. But throughout all of that, I was pen pals with my grandma my whole life. So,
Do you still have her letters?
I have some of her letters, yes. And when she passed, my mom found some letters that I had written her that she had kept, which I found very funny. Some of them were like, when I was in middle school, writing to her about my friend drama and the boys I liked and funny things that I wrote to my grandma. But so that's very fun.
Now, All I Know is a coming of age story. And Tell us a little bit about what this story is about and what inspired it for you.
Yeah, so the story is about these kind of two intertwined dysfunctional families. It is about that. It's about this one woman's discovery to kind of how to move beyond your childhood wounds and issues and how to find love and kind of live a healthy life with healthy adult relationships. The main character, Kai, has been in love with this boy for her whole life, kind of starts as a crush and develops into an adult relationship. But she needs to kind of find her way to love herself before she can love anyone else. And so it's kind of her journey of that. But I really wanted to explore kind of these complexities of families and how that impacts us as adults, because that's something I work with all the time as a therapist. I think my inspiration for the book was it started as writing a love story. I love a good love story. I love a good, messy, complicated love story. So that's pretty much what it started as for me. But then my background as a therapist kind of brought it into this. I think the inspiration was seeing all these my clients' difficult journeys and wanting to reflect that really honestly in a book, and not make it just kind of a happily ever after type romance. Which those are fine. I love those. Those have their place. But that's not what I ended up wanting to write. So.
Right, right. So Kai had a twin brother, and he plays a very important role in this book, too. So I don't know how much we want to give away, you know?
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much about Kate, other than to say, I was very close with my brother and sister, and I really wanted to delve into, like I said, a lot of different types of relationships, but the sibling relationship was really important to me. Again, I think many of us are very affected by siblings, and I think twins have this kind of thing of even more so, like this more of a connection, and yet you are these two different people. And Kai and Kate have different struggles and kind of compete, but also try to support each other. And they have different relationships with their parents that make things very complicated, particularly for Cade. And Cade does have mental illness. He's depressed. And so I wanted to also show how that impacts him and also how it impacts Kai and the rest of the family. Again, it's stuff I deal with every day. I mean, I work with a lot of depressed teens, but I also work with a lot of kids and adults that have family members going through struggles like that. And so I kind of wanted to represent what it's their perspectives, both
right,
of those perspectives.
Right. Yeah. It does seem like, I don't know, does it seem like being a teenager is harder now than ever?
I think so. I think, I mean, I think being a, from personal experience, being a teenager was always kind of hard. but I do think that, I think, you know, I think everyone says this, but I think social media makes it hard because I think there was always an opportunity for, you could, back when I was a teenager, you could go home and like escape whatever was troubling you, whether it was school or bullying or comparison or, you know, I'm not good enough, any of that. You could go home and then you were done with dealing with that for the day. And now there's never any like being done. And there's just such a, you know, beyond scale of comparison. Like you're not just comparing yourself to the people in your school. It's like the whole world. And I think it's just the not being able to turn it off thing that makes it especially difficult for teens. And I think the pandemic was very difficult for kids and teens. I mean, for most people, but I think for people in those formative years, it formed you differently than you might have. So
I agree. And I've spoken with other like college professors a year or two out, you know, of the pandemic, saying that they can tell a difference in the kids coming into college. Then it has to, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, at the very like right before the lockdown, talking to some kids in my life about how it seems in every generation there's some really defining event that occurs. And I was talking about like 9/11 for that generation was, you know, a hugely defining event. And for, you know, for me being quite a bit older, the, you know, the assassinations of John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, and then the Vietnam War protests. I wasn't really old enough to remember those assassinations, although they had an impact, certainly, but I was old enough to remember the protests against the war and things like that. And
yeah. And I think something I try to kind of allude to in the book is like, there are these kind of, I don't know, worldwide or culture-based phenomenon that impact people for sure. And then there's your personal, like these personal traumas or personal events that do change how you move forward in your life. They change you in some substantive way. And the question becomes, how are you going to make meaning of that and move forward and not let that, I mean, it might start, it may define you in some ways, but how to not let that destroy you and become all of you, kind of. And I think the other thing with, like we were saying, the pandemic and other things is, I think it becomes more challenging for people to be hopeful, especially for teenagers. There's a lot of cynicism, and I can understand that. But that is something in the book, too, that I'm trying to inspire some hope. Because in the book, a lot of terrible things happen to Kai, and she does find ways to move through those, even though she does, it does impact her for sure. But
right.
So I'm trying to also just provide that, like, yeah, these terrible things happen, and how do you move forward?
And she doesn't always make the healthiest of choices.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
But definitely. You... but you're able to still show that you can grow from whatever the circumstance is. You can grow and hopefully make a better choice the next time. And of course, her mother is a good kind of role model for her in a lot of ways. Someone that we don't get to know all that well in the book, but you could tell the importance she has in Kai's life. Now, are any of these characters based on specific people in your life?
No. No. I think that the most personal based stuff in the book is the settings, the places. The house Kai grew up in is the house I grew up in. And that was like a character in my life practically, which is the house is like a character in her life. And so a lot of the places Kai goes are places that I'm very familiar with or that meant something to me. But the people are more, I guess there's bits and pieces, there's flavors of different people that I've known in my life, but the people in the book are not particularly people I knew.
Okay, so you're not Kai.
I am not Kai, no. and it's funny because once the book's been out and people I know have read it more, you know, sometimes people will be like, oh, this was so-and-so, or this was, and I was like, oh, I guess I could see that, but that's not what I was thinking when I wrote it. So, I mean, being a therapist, I know like our subconscious is always working, right? So I won't deny that, you know, when someone points it out, I'm like, oh, that's true. That was probably in my brain somewhere, but it wasn't conscious.
Right.
Right. The other thing, I just want to go back to Kai's mom for a minute, because like I said, I throw a lot of hard things at Kai throughout the book, which I knew I was gonna. But also like as a therapist, I know that there are these resilience factors that do help people recover and move through traumas and difficult things. And one of those is having this so-called good enough mother. And so I did intentionally give Kai a mom that I tried not to make anyone in this book perfectly good or entirely evil. Like I want them to be complex, but I did want her to have a mom that gave her this good kind of solid foundation that would help her get through all of these other things that happened to her. So that part was very much an intentional choice.
So you called her a good enough mom. Is that a specific psychological term?
It is a psychology term. It's like in attachment theory, we talk, I mean, no mother is perfect. No parent is perfect. And it doesn't have to be a mom. It can be whatever primary caregiver you grow up with. But it's this idea that, you know, you can't be perfect. Nobody can be perfect. But as long as the good enough is basically showing up enough of the time and providing care and safety and security and attention most of the time in ways that mostly meet someone's needs is good enough. So.
Wow. So that's what we should aspire to, is being good enough rather than being perfect.
Absolutely. If you're aspiring to being perfect, you will fail, guaranteed.
That is true.
It's very hard for me to learn as a parent. It took me, I was definitely aiming for perfect and did not achieve it. So.
Oh. Yeah. Well, your kids might think you're perfect.
I don't think so. But I do think my kids think I'm good enough. So
that's good. That's good. I think my kids do too, to be honest.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Did a good job.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just grateful to have strong, healthy relationships with both my children as adults. So I think that means that I must have done something right.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love that also for myself.
Yeah. So you mentioned in your bio that you had a lightning bolt of inspiration for your first book, 5 Days. So what was that lightning bolt?
Well, the timing in my life, my oldest son was gone out of the house. My middle son was starting college. My youngest was going to be out the door very soon after. And I just was very aware of this kind of gaping hole that was coming into my life. I just didn't know what I was going to do with myself without being a mom. I mean, I'm always a mom, but having kids out of the house, it felt very empty to me in the moment. And so I decided I needed to fill that with something. And I'd always kind of played around with the idea of writing a book. And so I just sat down and started writing a book. And I had these two characters in my head for many years, and maybe two or three scenes. So I wrote those first. And then I just kind of, as I started writing those, it really just kind of poured out of me the rest of that story. And I will go back to that story. But when I finished that, this story then came, and this story felt more, like a better fit to be published first. That first book needs some work, so I will go back and revise that later. But yeah, so it was, I don't know if you've ever read Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, but she talks about like kind of that magical flow state of just inspiration. And that was what it was like for me for my first book, for 5 days and for all I know, just very literally kind of pouring out of me. The first drafts of both those books were very fast to write. And it did kind of feel like Kai and Josh were like in my head, living there, kind of telling me what happens next. And I felt kind of like a conduit almost of, okay, so now what? And then they would kind of whisper it to me kind of in this weird way. So that part was super fun. The revising and the editing is a lot more, a lot harder, takes a lot more discipline, a lot less fun, but rewarding, certainly.
So you left, you put 5 days aside and you moved forward with All I Know. And what was your path to publication with it?
Well, this is self-published, and I tried for quite a while. I sent out probably, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 queries to agents for this book, without any interest. And so I just decided to do it myself. I found an amazing cover designer in Anna Dorfman. I love my cover. I think it's beautiful. She did an amazing job on that. And then I got some help with the self-publishing process. I hired some people to help with the layout and that kind of thing. And but yeah, I basically just, I'm really not a person that's going to accept no for an answer. So when I kept getting no, I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it myself. So that's what I did.
So it's interesting because I your book doesn't look like it's self-published, and
Well, I was
it
very determined that if I'm going to do it, I want it to look not self-published. So thank you. That's like highest compliment. That was my goal, was to make
yes,
it
yeah.
hard to spot as a self-published book.
And it also, there's. I recently did an interview with the author of The Untold Story of Books, which talks about the history of publishing, which, interestingly enough, the time of the period of time where we had publishers giving writers advances and controlling what got published was a very brief period in history. It was just in the 20th century, and that was about it. And before that, authors self-published essentially. They paid the printers, and so we're kind of going back to what we did before. But because the self-publishing process is so much easier now with all the, because of the digital transformation, where you don't have to, make print plates and, spend a lot of money to publish. There's over 2 million books a year being published. And the majority of those are self-published.
How do you get your book through the noise? That's very
Yes,
difficult.
yeah. And so, and most, the majority of those books, of the books being published, sell less than 100 copies. And so, yeah, it's like, wow. I mean, the vast majority of them. So if you sell more than 100 copies, you're already in the top. I can't remember what percent, but not.
Oh, well, I want to know what percent, because that makes me feel, I will admit being a little, I mean, everyone has told me this, and you kind of go into it with this balance of realism, like, okay, not gonna, but then you have these hopes, right, for what could happen. And so I, this first, what's it been, almost 2 months that the book's been out, a month and a half. And I was feeling a little like, oh, that's it. But it is more than 100, so I will take that. So I guess I'm in the whatever percent, but
I'll look it up and I'll let you know what
okay.
that
Yeah, that actually makes me feel better than I was
Yeah.
feeling about sales, so.
Right. And so it's, a lot of people welcome the idea that there's no longer gatekeepers to say this gets published, this doesn't. And I understand that, but it also, in some sense, can make it harder for readers to figure out what's worth their time. And
Definitely.
so I do want to say this, and I don't very often, that if you had not told me this was self-published, I would not have known it has the quality both in the production and the writing of a mainstream publisher.
Thank you. Thank
So
you very much.
it really does. And because a lot of times self-published books kind of skimp on the editing a little bit. So there might the potential might be there, but the final aspects that make it an easy read, the keep you glued to the page are missing, and you have it. You've got it. So
Thank you. I mean, I will also, one thing that has, I think, made me a better writer and this a better book is I do, I went to, in 2018, I think, I went to the Community of Writers workshop, which is just in Lake Tahoe, and met up with a bunch of amazing writers. One group of writers that are kind of scattered across the country, but we have a, we share pages, we share each other's work, we give each other feedback. And then I have another group from that is a local group that we meet probably every other month, and share pages and give each other feedback. And so I've gotten a lot of great, very honest, and helpful input from a lot of very good writers. And then I hired an amazing editor at the end part of it. Her name is Joy Johansson, and she was amazing and helped me clean up all the other little things that needed to be, well, little and big actually, but so I do think, for me, I think being open to criticism and looking for it and looking for that honesty and having kind of the wherewithal to handle feedback that is critical but important to make the book better, I think is important. And to spend the time not skimping on that part of the process. Like I said, the inspiration stuff is fun, but the like reworking and being like, okay, this still isn't working. How do I do it better? That part was really hard. So I appreciate you saying that you see that, so.
Yes, yeah, for sure. So, why don't you read a little bit from All I Know for us, Holly?
Okay. And you wanted like 6 minutes, 'cause that feels long, but I can do that.
Yep.
Okay, so like I said, the book is about Kai and Josh, and their two intertwined dysfunctional families. Kai has been in love with Josh since she can remember, but Josh sees her more like a little sister. So the scene I'm going to read is when Kai is 12, Josh is 16, and he's come to stay with her family after a crisis at his home. And the night before this scene, Kai has shocked Josh by impulsively kissing him, and the next day he doesn't like that. He's very upset. And so the next day she goes looking for him to make amends for that. I walked slowly through the woods in no hurry to face this awkward reckoning, distracting myself by thinking about how much I loved springtime on my mountain, the anticipation of summer, knowing something great was right around the corner. In spring, the woods came alive with color. Variations of pinks and purples bloomed on lilac bushes and mountain laurel. Dogwood trees blossomed in white and pink. Forsythia glowed bright yellow. Purple and yellow crocuses would be the first flowers to peek out, putting them at risk when there was a late frost or snow. Hundreds of daffodils grew wild throughout the woods and on the side of the hill in front of our house, in all combinations of yellow, orange, and white. I loved the daffodils, but my favorite flowers were lily of the valley, delicate little white bells that smelled gloriously sweet, although the honeysuckle smelled even sweeter. After stopping to smell my 20th flower, I took a deep breath and headed to the mossy spot I knew Josh liked. I found him lying with his arm over his eyes, his distressed pose. I sat down next to him, my stomach in knots. "Sorry, Josh," I said. "Okay," he replied. "It won't happen again," I said. "At least not for a while," I thought, and hopefully he would be the one to kiss me next time. "Okay," he said. He was lying perfectly still, probably afraid to move around me now. I was a bundle of jittery nerves, sitting there rocking my legs from side to side, tapping my feet together. "Can we go back to normal?" I asked. "Okay." "That's not very convincing," I said. He moved his arm to look at me. "My life is so not normal right now, Kai, and you just made it weirder. I would love for things to go back to normal, but I don't think that's going to happen." He put his arm back over his eyes. I felt like I was going to cry, but held it in. "I really am sorry. I didn't mean it." "Don't bullshit me, Kai. If you want to apologize, at least be straight." "That will make it even weirder. I'm trying to make it easier and better for you. The way I handled Dad wasn't working here." "What do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want." He sat up, looked at me, then looked off into the distance. "I know you have feelings for me, and you know I don't feel that way." He paused. I was pretty much holding my breath because it felt like breathing might lead to crying, and I really didn't want to cry. "But I do care about you," he said, "and I hope you know that too." I let out a long breath, feeling like this might actually be okay. He picked up a branch and poked at the moss and dirt, then added, "You just have to stay in your lane, okay? We're like cousins, siblings, friends. That's how it is." I picked up a stick and dug in the moss too, thinking about that. "I'm okay with friends and like second cousins twice removed, not siblings. Can that be how it is?" He grinned and squinted over at me. "Okay, second cousins twice removed." He tossed the branch aside, lay back down, and put his arm over his eyes again. "Your dad was not happy with me." "Me neither, but he's fine now. My dad likes to avoid messy stuff, so you'll never hear about it again." I dug in the dirt for a few minutes while we both pondered things. "You are a brave girl, Kai, and clever. You put yourself out there and get what you want most of the time, huh?" "Most of the time, eventually. Sometimes I just have to be patient and wear people down." I grinned and lay down on the moss next to Josh. I felt different, older. "This has been a weird day," I said. "You're telling me," Josh answered. "I had a talk with my mom that was different than ones we've had before. And this is different too, talking with you like this. But I talked to my dad and that was just the same. I don't know. It just got me all confused." "Confused about what?" He turned his head toward me, his arm shading his face, but not blocking his eyes now. I kept looking at the sky. Watching the light through the leaves made it easier to articulate my thoughts. "Is it better to tell people what you think or to tell them what they want to hear?" "Dang, that's a serious question." He rolled back into his contemplative position, arm over eyes. "I have no clue. I usually tell my dad what he wants to hear and do what he wants me to do, and my life goes along just fine. Then I stand up to him and I get punched in the face and kicked out of the house." "Yeah, that's what I mean. Mom said I should use my voice, not worry about what other people want to hear. But then she told me what I should say to you and Dad, and it was what both of you wanted to hear, not what I really wanted to say." A breeze rustled the leaves above me, and I squinted as the sun poked through the fresh spaces. "I usually tell my dad what he wants to hear because he fights with my mom when she says what she actually thinks," I continued. "It works better my way, but I don't really like how it feels. I came out here to tell you what you wanted to hear, but then I told you what I really thought, and that felt better. I rolled my head to look at him. It's confusing. It's confusing because it's bullshit, he said. Is that your favorite word? I teased. It's my life right now, he joked back, although it wasn't really a joke. It's like they say to do it one way, but they don't really mean it, and they definitely don't do it that way, I said. I've been thinking about all this since my mom put me on that train in the middle of the night, and I still don't have a clue, Josh said. The one thing I do know is that some people clearly don't want to know what we're thinking or how we feel. Some people definitely want us to tell them what they want to hear, and if we want to live with those people without causing problems, we better do it their way. You're going to do it that way with your dad? You bet, but I'm also going to get out of there as soon as I possibly can. College, work, whatever. I'm out of there 1 year from now. I can keep my mouth shut for a year, but then I don't want to be like that. I want to be someone who means what I say and does what feels right. I want to be that kind of person too. Maybe just not with my dad. Yeah, probably not with our dads. But maybe with each other? Maybe, Josh peeked at me again, as long as you stay in your lane. I smiled at him and looked back at the sky. I wasn't going to say anything that wasn't true, so I kept my mouth shut. I saw him shake his head a little, grinning at my intentional non-response. I was thinking all these deep and profound thoughts, but mostly, really, truly, predominantly, I was thinking about Josh lying next to me, how someday maybe he would reach over and take my hand or roll over and kiss me, but how right now it was nice to just lie here next to him and know that he knew what I was thinking and feeling and that he was still there beside me. He didn't like it, it wasn't ideal, but he was hanging in here with me, and that meant a lot.
And that was Holly LaBarbera reading from All I Know. So the title, how did you come up with that and what does it mean?
Yeah, the title meant a lot to me. I'm glad you asked that question. And actually one person I had showed the book to and was working with to possibly publish, they didn't like the title. And I was like, no, I love the title. So the book is divided into three parts. The first section is called Certainty, and that's Kai's a kid. And as with many children, she's very sure of everything in her life. Kind of at the end of the certainty part, this tragic thing happens. And the second part of the book is called Doubt, because after this tragedy, she pretty much doubts everything. She doesn't really trust in the world, trust in herself, isn't sure about love and all of that. And so the second part is Doubt. And then the last part of the book is called Faith, which is Kai kind of integrating all of that and coming to this place where she knows she doesn't know everything, but she feels like she knows enough to make decisions and move forward in her life. So it's to me that, and it's all I know, and whatever Kai knows in that moment is enough to make her next decision and do the next thing. So I felt like it was her kind of growth of knowledge and understanding of herself. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the journey of the book, the way I see it.
Do you miss Kai? You know, when she stopped writing, did you miss having her in your head?
I did. I miss Kai and Josh. I did. But then I started writing a new story. And so, like, sorry to say, I kind of replaced them. But I will say it's nice to get back to, like, kind of the promotion part of the book and, like, revisit them, because there were years that I spent so much time with them in my head. And so you're right. It is kind of sad to leave them behind, but it's been nice to kind of have them very active in my mind again. And it's also hard to balance that with trying to write these new characters who kind of had taken over. So.
So do you ever have trouble, like, you're writing your new book and you realize you're maybe writing in Kai's voice rather than the new character's voice?
Not so much that. It's more just like, you know, you're having I don't know, like enjoying the imaginary company of one and then kind of shifting to pay attention to these other imaginary people. Yeah, so I don't think I worry so much about them overlapping. It's more just kind of turning the attention.
So you mentioned that you have three sons, correct?
Yes.
Have they read the book? And if so, what kind of response did you get from them?
Yeah, that was actually really fun. They read the book once it was in book form, so fairly recently in the last few months. My youngest read it first, and my youngest is he's very introspective, a little more quiet of a person. And we had probably an hour conversation about the book, which was amazing and so fun. He doesn't have a lot to say, but when he says something, it's usually pretty meaningful. And so we had a really great conversation, and that was fun. My middle son read it next, and he was the first one to bring up the sex in the book. There's a good chunk of sex in the book. And as he was reading it, he was like, "Mom, Kai grew up and she's having sex. And that's very awkward to know you wrote these scenes." And like, it's very awkward. And so that was funny and fun. And and then my oldest it was fun. He read it and he actually hosted an author conversation with me when I was traveling in Florida to promote the book, and that's where he lives. And so we had a great Q&A about the book, which was really fun to do. He's a musician. He's a very charismatic person. So he was a great host for that conversation.
How fun. How delightful that must have been.
Yeah. It was. Yes. Yeah.
Other family member, is your parents, are they still with us? And what do they think of the sex scenes?
I'm not sure it came up as much with my parents, but my mom has read, probably 20 versions of All I Know. She was one of my first beta readers, and she's read very many iterations of this book. So, and that being said, the book I will return to, which is called 5 Days, there's a lot more sex in 5 Days. 5 Days is a different type of book. And so I feel like my mom and I already worked through the fact that I was writing sex scenes, because she's read that one many times as well. Obviously my husband's read it, and my brother and sister, and they're the ones, it's funny because, and even friends they're the ones that say like, "Oh, like I was seeing," like my husband was like, "Oh, it's hard not to see Cade being your brother, my brother," which is funny because I don't see Cade as my brother. And he's like, "Yeah, but Cade plays with Star Wars and my brother was super into Star Wars." I'm like, okay, that's true. And so when people point these things out, I am aware of that. And yet that was not what I intended when I was writing it. But it has been very fun to hear people's perspectives and what comes up for them as they're reading it. So
you're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Holly LaBarbera, author of All I Know. How long did you spend working on this book?
Well, the first draft was probably 6 months, that it kind of was a quick dump. But then the editing and revising was a good 2-3 years that I spent circling back, trying to get it right.
And obviously you have a full-time job. And so what is your writing schedule look like?
Yeah, I've tried to be, I mean, I'm a fairly disciplined person, but it doesn't work for me to write that way, which is kind of, I think, a fun departure from my normal MO. I think my creative endeavors are, I've always been very into scrapbooking, and this is true for scrapbooking and for writing. I'm more of a, I want to spend a whole weekend just writing nonstop or revising or editing, I need big chunks of time. And so I've done that. Like, I'll block out a weekend and then I'm working on it all that weekend. Doing the whole like half hour a day or an hour a day thing doesn't really work, it's hard for me to transition from like my clients and my private practice and my teaching and that kind of thing and my family, and then transition to the book and then transition out of it. So it works better for me to just set aside a clump of time and do it then. And so that's kind of how I work with it. I'm lucky my kids are all, self-sufficient and adults. And I mean, I guess they're not really my kids anymore. They're actually adults that have to my children. So I don't, my husband's very independent. So we don't, I don't, other than the work stuff, I don't have other demands necessarily on my life right now.
Do you have any rituals that around that writing time?
Well, I do. I come up with, I have playlists for all my books. So I listen to music. I listen to the music more in the in between to kind of keep me connected with the stories. So I'll often listen to those songs when I'm driving to work or when I'm taking a walk, just to kind of keep me in the zone when I can't actually be writing. Like that's the time when I'm writing in my head, I guess. Other than that, I don't think I have any rituals.
Well, what are some of the songs on the playlist for All I Know?
Oh, I can tell you. Well, I have, I think I might have this. I either have this on my website or I've intended to put it there and it's not there yet, but I do need to put it there if it's not. So I have Pink. It leads off with Pink, All I Know So Far. There's a song called Come Home by One Republic and Sarah Bareilles that is very, one's called The Good Old Days by Macklemore. There's kind of a nostalgia to this book, and so kind of the time frame, she's a kid in like the 70s, 80s, or I guess 80s. So I feel like there's a nostalgic feel. You asked me at the beginning about writing letters to my grandma, and Kai writes letters throughout this book to different people, and I feel like that kind of adds to this nostalgia. People don't really do that as much, other than me. People don't really do that as much anymore.
Well, my mother, Caroline, she still writes letters to people.
There you go. And my mom and I write. But anyway, so in that same vein, I have two songs that are in the book, referred to in the book a lot, is That's Life by Frank Sinatra and Obladi Oblada by the Beatles. So that's kind of the beginning of my playlist.
You said you and your mom write letters. Do you mail them or do you email them?
No, I still mail things.
Yeah.
I still buy stamps at the store. I also have a one of my college roommates. We haven't done it for a while, but for a long decades, we've written letters to each other. And we'll write a letter, even though we obviously could email and we could text. And we do that too sometimes, but it's just kind of been the thing that's kept us attached is, I mean, it's only probably a couple times a year, but I'll write to her about a great book I read and she'll write to me. And so I have a few people I write to.
I'm glad that you do, and Caroline will be very glad to hear that you write letters because it seems like it's a lost art almost. And we have letters from family members in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that have endured all these years, and we're not going to have that 100 years from now. Our descendants aren't going to have that so much because.
Yeah, and I wonder, because I get a little, there's bittersweetness to that for sure. Part of me wonders though if they're, I don't know that it's something they're gonna miss. Like they just never have, they just aren't aware. And even like when my mom writes to one of my boys, they didn't really learn cursive. Like a lot of times they can't read it. They're like, I can't even read this letter. And so I think it's just, there's a lot of obstacles to that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. One of my favorite quotes from writers, well, one of my favorite writers of all time was Mark Twain, and he wrote letters to people. And in one of his letters, he wrote, "I would have written a shorter letter, but I didn't have time." And because it's actually harder to write concisely. It takes more time to write concisely than to just spill it all out on the page. So when you're writing, are you, you said like your first dump, you know, your first draft is very quickly. Are you, do you end up with way more than what you're going to have? Or do you end up with more of a sparser thing that you have to fill in?
It's a, I think it's a little of both. Like there's sections that I get really sad that I'm like, okay, I love this passage, but it just doesn't, it's not necessary to this story. It doesn't fit. It's too much. So there's been things that I've gotten rid of that have been sad for me to let go of, but I think it made the book better. And then, so there's part of that initial dump is writing a lot of stuff that doesn't end up getting used. But then I think there's also parts in that initial dump that are disconnected, right? And then I do have to fill in with, so it's kind of different. Like some things get cut because they just didn't make sense. It might be great writing, but it doesn't make sense to the story. but then there's pieces that it's like, okay, but how do we get from here to here? Or she can't just all of a sudden be this way. Like I have to get her there, like move her in that direction.
Right, right.
So yeah, I think it's a little of both.
Now that section that you wrote where Kai had a crush on Josh, and what was the age difference between them?
It's 4-ish years. I kind of play with that because in the book, they see each other a lot during the summers. And I made it so that Josh's birthday is in the spring and hers is in the fall. So it does feel like a 5-year. I mean, technically it's 5 years in number wise. A lot of the time they're together when they're young, which I did intentionally to make the age gap bigger or appear bigger.
Yeah.
But it's really, they're really 4 years apart, which once you're 20, it doesn't matter as much.
Right. Right. But when you're
16, it does matter a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I never had, I don't remember having crushes on older boys like that when I was that age. I mean, I had a brother a year older, a year and a half older. And so his friends, yeah, but they were just a year older, but not older than that. But you say you did, you remember having that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
I would have been like, I really felt for Kai because I would have been so humiliated to have been sort of found out about having this crush.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I've also had people be like, nobody likes boys when they're 7 and 8. And I'm like, all right, I had crushes on boys when I was 7 and 8. Like, that's not true. I mean, you didn't, obviously, you know, whoever, but yeah, super embarrassing. And I've had that happen to me too. And from clients, you know, people talking about being found out, and it's humiliating. And it's crushing, right? When those feelings aren't reciprocated, even though you know that in your heart that it's not, but
yeah,
to be straight up faced with it is different.
It's interesting why is it humiliating to, you know, in some cases, unrequited love, people are fine, you know, everyone knows that they love this person who doesn't love them back, and they don't feel any humiliation about it. And but for other people, it's like you said, soul crushing to, for, you know, not just to have it happen, but for anybody to know. And
yeah, I feel like, I think Kai gets very affected by it in the moment, but I do think her character as a kid is that she doesn't hold on to it and even in those passages where she finds out, or like there's an earlier one where Stephanie reveals like, oh, Kai's in love with you. And, you know, there's a whole scene but then by the next day, Kai kind of gets over it. And so she is a kid that feels a lot of things in the moment, and then she gets over it. And other than like liking Josh, she doesn't ever really get over that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
when you started writing this book, how much of the plot did you know before you started writing?
I think I focused it was more the characters that I knew at first, like the characters and this, like the love story thread, I knew right away. And so most of the scenes I wrote, I did not write the book chronologically. I wrote a lot of the Kai and Josh scenes at throughout different ages. I wrote those scenes first. And that was kind of this then what I needed to fill in, like, okay, but how did they get from there to here? And then kind of I knew Cade, I knew what was going to happen. So I guess I knew plot points. I knew in my head how it was going to end. I knew these kind of marker events that were going to happen, but the kind of the more complicated, or I guess the intricate plot stuff evolved as I wrote and as I revised.
Did the characters do anything that surprised you?
Yeah, they did things that surprised me. They also did things, some of the things that happen, even though I knew they were going to happen, I got very emotional as I wrote them and as I like, really? Am I really going to make that happen? I'm like, okay, it's not, again, this is these moments of it didn't feel like me making it happen. It just felt like that's what happens. Like that's, it's just what happens. And so, some of it surprised me. A lot of things made me sad. A lot of things made me angry. Like, Josh, how could you do that? And I'm like, okay, but you just wrote that. You made him do it. So I had a lot of those kind of weird experiences.
And were there any characters that became more important to the story than you originally expected?
Yeah. One of the things, and we haven't talked about this, but Kai's friend. Friendships were really important to me, and so like when I started the book, like I said, it was this love story, and I first viewed it as Kai and Josh's story, and then I as I was going forward, I'm like, no, this is just Kai. It's Kai's story, and Josh is a big part of it, but it's really Kai's story. And then once I realized that, I kind of expanded to, okay, it's really Kai's relationships with lots of people, not just Josh. And so then, like her relationship with her mom and her relationship with her brother and her friendships became really important to me. And so kind of her best friend Danny and how that relationship evolved and Danny's character and the way she kind of, I love Danny. I think after Kai, she's probably my favorite character. She's kind of this no BS person and just tells it like it is. And I think it's great to have a friend like that. And so she surprised me as I wrote her and their friendship. And it became really important to Kai and to me in telling the story.
So Kai becomes sort of accidentally a photojournalist. She didn't really
Right.
set
Yeah.
out to be. So do you have any experience with photojournalism, or why did you choose that career for her?
I didn't. That was my one area of research, I guess, for this book is I did like find people to talk to who've done that. And it was a little tricky because that's a very different career now than it was. Like Kai does this in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so it looks much different now than it did then. But I did do some, I did talk to some people who had worked in that area in those days. Just to get a better sense of how it might be. But no, I hadn't done it. I did see Josh as being this kind of independence at all costs person. And so the job of him being this kind of nature journalist who travels the world was important for his character. And then Kai kind of dropping everything to go do that with Josh was important to her character in that moment. And obviously I didn't want her to stay there, but that's, I wanted her to be there for a while. And so having this job where they had, where they were constantly in motion, this just fit with that. I felt like it was necessary for their journey.
Now, have you been to some of the places that they went?
I've been to some of the places they went. The more dramatic, I have not been to. So that was a little bit of research too. But some of it, my mom is a big adventurer. And so, like she did the Tour de Mont Blanc, so she gave me, my mom did the Pacific Crest Trail, and so she the John Muir Trail, and so she
Your mom
gave
hiked,
me
she hiked it?
yeah.
Wow.
My mom's a very adventurous person. She hiked it when she was like in her 60s,
Oh my
so
goodness.
yeah, she's amazing. Backpacked and all of that, but some of the places like the Thailand trip they go on, I've never been there. Nobody I knew had been there, so that was just kind of researching, reading about it, looking at pictures so that I could write that. But some of the places, I mean, Hawaii, I'd been there to all those places. A lot of the like U.S. places, Yellowstone, Yosemite, I've been to those places. So.
So we only have a few minutes left. What is your next book a similar genre or is it completely different?
No, well, I mean, it's similar in that I think it's contemporary fiction. So under
Okay.
that broad stroke, it's similar. But the next book is a little more, well, the little hook of it is it starts with a woman watching her ex-husband get murdered by his new wife in this way that she's kind of orchestrated. So it's a little
Whoa.
kind of darker, a little more psychological thriller, but not really. It really is still more about like family and choices and love going astray and things like that. But it's a book, so that's the start of it, and then it goes back in time 2 years, and we get to the current, you know, how did we get here?
Wow.
It's told through alternating perspectives between the woman, the wife, the husband who ends up dead, and their teenage daughter. And so it alternates between those points of view. And I'm very excited about it. It is quite different, but it was really fun to write. And then it's evolved because the teenage daughter in that book is going to end up growing up to be the main character in 5 days, which was the first book I wrote. And so as I was writing this new book, probably about halfway through, I was like, oh my gosh, Lainey is going to grow up to be that person. And so that was very exciting. And then the rest of the book, I kind of had that in my mind. So I'm excited to finish revisions on that, go back and kind of rewrite the 5 days. So
So
those are kind of,
you'll have a series then.
yeah, those two books will be a pair, which will be fun.
Yeah. Well, Holly, thank you so much for being with us today. Our guest today was Holly LaBarbera, author of All I Know. And we always close with a quote. And this is from Rooney Mara, who's an actress. She wrote, "It's really hard coming of age in today's society where society wants you to make the decision of what you want to do with your life by the time you're 16 years old. Most kids don't know what they want to do. How could they? They haven't lived in the real world yet." And, you know, that's just one. We talked earlier about the challenges of coming of age in society
That's
today,
amazing.
and that's just one of them. And
Yeah.
Kai certainly faced a few more. Yeah.
Yes, I love that quote. That's
Yeah.
great and definitely resonates with the way the book is too, so.
Well, thank you, and see you all next week on Writers' Voices.
Thank you for having me.